viewing retirement, public employees computing pension nest eggs, pension fund administrators computing liabilities. We're bringing together Iowa Public Employees Retirement System head Donna Mueller, Central Iowa Taxpayers Association director Gretchen Tegler, and State Treasurer Michael Fitzgerald on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
Iowa banks know you want honest advice about how to best reach your financial goals. Whether it's financing and education, buying a new home, growing a business, or funding retirement, Iowa banks, Iowa values. MyIowaBank.com.
Iowa Communications Network. The ICN is committed to the enhancements of distance learning and continues to meet the demands for greater access of high-speed internet by educational users. Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org.
Alliant Energy, working to help small businesses control energy costs with energy-efficient equipment and advice on smart energy use. Information is available at alliantenergy.com.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Celebrating more than 40 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television, this is the Friday, November 22 edition of Iowa Press. Here is Dean Borg.
Part of a working career is providing for one's living expenses when the maximum earning years are over. And most people also hope there's enough left for some enjoyment over and above basic living expenses. Retirement funds, though, generally provide that security, but some states and cities now are finding their obligations to future retirees aren't matching what's in the retirement fund. For example, as of a year ago at this time, Iowa's Public Employees Retirement Systems, better known by the acronym IPERS, had about 80% of its obligations funded. And that's about 17% or almost $6 billion less than IPERS was reporting just 2 years before that. Well, you might ask, who's on the hook? Public employees expecting their pensions or taxpayers who employed them and promised retirement? We're seeking insight from IPERS CEO Donna Mueller, Central Iowa Taxpayers Association Director Gretchen Tegler, who incidentally formerly administered Iowa's state government budget, and Iowa's state treasurer for the past 31 years, Michael Fitzgerald. All three of you, welcome to Iowa Press.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. And across the Iowa Press table, Des Moines Register political columnist Kathy Obradovich and Radio Iowa News Director Kay Henderson.
Let's begin with IPERS. First of all, how many people are affected by this system, are currently drawing, and will eventually draw benefits?
All right. We often say IPERS covers 1 in 10 Iowans because, being the largest public employee retirement system, we have over 340,000 members. Over 100,000, about 104,000, are retirees currently drawing retirement. 165,000 are currently active employees contributing to the system. Those are people who are our school teachers, everybody employed in school districts, the counties, the cities, and state government.
Ms. Tegler, there are a few other public employee retirement funds in the state?
Yes, there are three others. One is the Municipal Fire and Police Retirement System, which is known as a 411. And that includes the police and fire officers in our 49 largest cities, basically. There's also a peace officers retirement system that covers our state patrol and Department of Public Safety, some Department of Public Safety employees at the state level. And then there's also a judges, a small judges retirement system.
So how many people are impacted by that?
Many fewer. There are about 8,000 people in the police and fire system. The peace officers system is smaller yet, probably, 4,000.
Do those at all overlap? IPERS overlap with any of those, or do they overlap with Social Security?
In the case of the municipal police and fire system, the 411 system, those employees do not receive Social Security, with a few exceptions. Ankeny and a couple of them around here receive both. In the peace officers system, they do not receive Social Security, but the IPERS employees do.
Dean earlier outlined the condition of IPERS. If you could give us maybe an update. I understand that you'll be giving an update in December, but what is the unfunded liability today?
See, first let's explain what the unfunded liability is. You know, we are projecting our liabilities, which are benefits, not just for current retirees, but for even the new employee who started their 30-year career yesterday. So we're projecting liabilities, payments out over the next 30, 50, even into 70 years. So the liabilities, projecting those liabilities and projecting the earnings to match those liabilities, we hope to manage towards what we call 100% funded. And as Dean mentioned, we're at 80% funded. We've had an increase. We're at 81% funded as of the end of this fiscal year. And the unfunded liability has been brought down from $5.9 to $5.8, I'm rounding, billion dollars. So we're making progress on funding that unfunded liability, which doesn't have to be paid today. That also we manage over the next 30 years.
Mr. Fitzgerald, you were on the program in the past year with, I guess last year, 2012, with former state auditor Dave Vout, and both of you said the fund was in solid shape. We've just heard it's not completely able to pay out everything that it will owe in the future. Is that, in your view, solid shape?
Well, I said it had concerns last year, too, and even made a recommendation. The, you know, state treasurer, I've continually looked, what is the best financial foundation the state should have? Always have advocated for a balanced budget, which we have in the state, advocated for gap accounting, which you have covered real well in the late 80s and early 90s. The state dealt with that. But now we have a balanced budget on gap. We have surpluses, all things that a good, responsible state should have. But if you look at Iowa's finances, where is there a concern? And you look at our pension funds, and we're 80% funded. Now, compared to other states, that's, you know, that's pretty good. That's, but it's still a concern. And as David Vout mentioned last year and a little over 10 years ago, it was 100% funded or close to it. Now it was close to $6 billion underfunded. At the same time, employees in the state has contributed more to those funds. IPERS investments have done very, very well. They're in the top quartile. Just done real well, over 10% return last year. And we still have this deficit. So as the rating agencies tell us, you know, we're going to downgrade states if you fall into the 70s or 60s. It's a concern. It's not the only concern. But it concerns me. And I think I just want to see that corrected for our IPERS retirees as well as the state.
Well, how concerned should state employees be right now? You have a situation where, you know, let's say somebody who's getting ready to retire, should they be concerned about the state of IPERS and whether it's going to be there for them? What about somebody who's just starting off in state employment? Should they be worried?
I think if you're ready to retire from IPERS, you should feel pretty comfortable. It's a good system. It's solid. And if you're an employee, you know, as was mentioned, most of the court cases and all that say, the state's on the hook to make sure they've honored those commitments. If you've earned a benefit, you get them. So as when I look around the country and I see different states, how are they correcting their state pension systems? They are always shorting the new employees coming into the system. And that's probably what would have to be done in Iowa. I'm not a legal expert on law, but that seems to be the pattern around the country. New employees are really being hurt with the kind of benefits they have. And I would hate to see that happen.
Ms. Mueller, you look like you may have something to add there.
Well, I want to inform everyone that Iowa was really ahead of the ball in reforming its pension system a couple years ago. And these reforms went into effect in 2012. And Iowa did not put it off on only new employees, because as Treasurer Fitzgerald says, that's really unfair. That's creating two classes of employees with two different benefits. Because don't forget, the retirement benefit is part of a compensation package for employees. And in Iowa, employees are contributing to the system as well. The reforms that took effect is that employees are sharing in the risk of the program and in the responsibility of reforming and correcting it. So employees are paying more now, and it varies every year. And in addition, there were reforms where benefits were changed for even current active members.
Ms. Tegeler, we've heard that employees don't have that much to worry about. What about taxpayers? Are they the ones that are going to be on the hook?
Yes. As Treasurer Fitzgerald pointed out, these are financial obligations. So the work that has occurred and the benefits that went with that are payable at some point in the future. We're already beginning to see some of the impacts on taxpayers.
Tell us about some of those. What are,
on communities today, our 411 system, it kind of illustrates what can happen. IPERS is not in that position at this point.
And that's police and fire, 411
police
system.
Police and fire, where the cities are now paying 30% on top of salary to fund pensions. And we've seen in the city of Des Moines, for example, we've seen every library now having to be closed an additional day a week. The park trash isn't picked up as often. West Des Moines has a new fire station, but they can't afford to staff it because these pension obligations are growing, you know, 10, 20 times the rate of growth in revenue. So we have the crowding out effect, and that's impacting communities, quality of life, and taxpayers are paying for that. And then looking ahead, the unfunded liability is something that, again, the way that it's structured in Iowa, employers and employees are both helping to erase that, but it's really being put out 30 years. So 30 years from now, people would be paying to erase an unfunded liability associated with work that occurred by a state or a local employee this year.
Ms. Mueller, you're grimacing somewhat there.
Oh, sorry.
Were you grimacing, or were you agreeing with what Ms. Tegeler said?
Oh, these are concerns, and for that reason, you have to have a funding policy to address the unfunded liability and to best match
Are you doing that?
I believe IPERS has taken the legislature sets the policy.
Yes.
The legislature determines the benefits. The legislature determines the way to fund the system.
But was some of this created by giving, in lieu, maybe even Gretchen Tegeler, when you were director of management and budget, were they giving state workers less than average pay increases, but boosting their retirement benefits in lieu of those pay benefits, and now that's come back to haunt us? Did that happen?
I can't speak to whether that happened in the 80s or 90s, but what I can speak to is one thing I believe both of my colleagues here have mentioned is that once there was funding was at 97%. That was at the beginning of 2000 when the stock market was booming. And then there were a couple other factors that happened in early 2000. You had the tech bubble. Now, investments support 70% of the benefits.
That's equities, the stock market.
The stock market, yes.
That's where you're invested.
There and many other places.
Yes.
It's a diversified portfolio. But you have to have a funding policy and consistently fund. And what happened for over 10 years with IPERS was that the funding was not provided at the actuarially required contribution. And that's what a lot of public funds have fallen into, where the government has not paid the bill when it's come due. That has added interest on interest, and over $1 billion of the $5 billion unfunded liability comes from not paying the contributions when due.
One of the remedies that former state auditor Dave Vout has advocated is using some of the state surplus to pay that bill that wasn't paid over the past 10 years. Ms. Tegeler, is that one of the proposals that you floated to the governor this past week when you met in Branstad's office to discuss this issue and some of the remedies that may be available?
No. When we met, we talked about the kinds of things our association is doing to help Iowans better understand what we have, because a lot of this happens under the radar. It's on autopilot. Budget directors don't like that. And decisions are being made kind of automatically that we don't really, we aren't consciously thinking about how much we're paying for pensions. I don't believe that the answer is to just take money and fund that unfunded liability right now and perpetuate the current systems as they are. I believe it's important to take a look at what are some of the fundamental issues that are that we have learned are associated with these defined benefit programs. As Ms. Mueller mentioned, the issue was, administrators of these plans do a great job, by the way. She's correct that the policymakers make these decisions. What happens is when times are good, a lot of times the benefits are enhanced, and when times are not good, the legislature and other governing bodies tend not to fund it. And so what you have is over time something that's increasingly expensive and underfunded, and it becomes more and more difficult to get out of that. It's just the nature of these plans. It's hard to resist.
Right.
People that want increases in benefits, and yet when it's...
The benefits stay high, but the funding decreases if times are not so good. Kate?
Right. We've diagnosed the problem, but let's talk about remedies. Would raising the retirement age for public employees be part of the mix? Because many state employees are able to retire when they're in their 50s.
Well, police and fire employees can retire at age 55. And receive, in the case of the 411 plan, 82% of their high 3 years for life. Our state troopers receive 88% of their high three pay for life. 55 is pretty young. We just read about the police chief in Waukee now that has to retire because he's 65, but doesn't want to. Certainly, longevity is better.
So what would you do? Would you raise longer. The retirement age, or would you lower the percentage of the pension that they can earn?
There are two avenues that one can go on looking at these plans. One is to stick with the plan we have, the guaranteed benefits aspect of it, and make adjustments in the benefits or make adjustments in the contributions. All of those things are possible, and some have been made already, mm-hmm. to IPER's credit. The real question is, can we afford and sustain this type of plan going into the future in a political environment where, again, the pressure is so great on increasing benefits
and
once
they're guaranteed.
So the alternatives are different plan structures. Where
like a 401k?
Some states are looking and have enacted changes. Gosh, in the 90s, Michigan, under Governor Engler, they looked at this as something that was important for their economic development competitive prospects. They changed to a form of defined contributions. Other states have done hybrids where they've kept a guaranteed benefit plan but at a lower guaranteed benefit and then coupled that with a defined contribution plan that has upside as well.
So there are a variety of structure changes.
And the structure change
really is who's going to be at risk. Is the employee at risk or is the employer at risk in a defined benefit?
Exactly. Right now, defined benefit, the employer, the taxpayers, ultimately are at risk for all of that.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Fitzgerald,
whereas others are not.
Would Democrats object if state workers, public workers in Iowa, started having 401ks and donating part of their salary to their own pension rather than having taxpayers fund it?
Well, I think they would, and I think Republicans would, too.
Why?
I think the IPERS, it's been a great system for Iowa public employees. It started back in 1953, and it worked well. Dean, you were hitting on that issue up until 1998. Things were going well, as Donna mentioned, in the stock market. Benefits were increased, greatly increased. As a matter of fact, we used to have a cap on IPERS at about $45,000. It would raise with cost of living. Today, that cap is $255,000.
For what a person can pull out?
Well, their wages that can be considered. And if they work 35 years, they get 65% of that. So a person can retire, if they're that fortunate, with a $160,000 a year pension. That is, I think, bad public policy. I think that's way too high. I think that's a benefit that we ought to scale back. And I've advocated that because I think a good retirement benefit, the average IPERS benefits, about $17,000 a year. That's reasonable. So, it's sustainable. Employees won't be asked to increase the pay they pay every year. Neither will the taxpayers.
Well, how many people are really getting that high pension payout, and how much does that really affect what IPERS is their financial situation?
In the actuarial picture, very, very, very few, and it doesn't. It isn't what's causing the $5.9 billion or $5.8 billion unfunded liability. I want to add one thing. When you said should, you know, employees be paying into the system, employees currently are paying into the system. And I would say IPERS, by the precedent that the legislature set several years ago, is a shared risk program, especially for active members, because active members have a variable contribution rate just as the employers do in IPERS. And in IPERS, the active employees did have their benefits changed, where they have been lowered because now instead of a 3-year average, it's a 5-year average. And for an early retirement, for an individual that leaves the workforce and files for retirement before they reach a normal retirement age, age 65 or some other rules, I won't get into the details, but they are now going to have a reduction in that formula that is actuarial equivalent of an early retirement. So that's encouraging people to work longer.
Yeah,
so I think there's some major changes that have occurred that we'll see continuing benefit to reducing the unfunded liability.
The other thing you hear about the public employee retirement system is people who retire at 55 or 60, and then they collect their pension, and then they start working for the state, maybe even at their old job again, maybe as a contractor status, and suddenly they're collecting a salary from the state and their pension. How often does that actually happen? Is that something that affects the bottom line, or is that mostly a political issue?
First of all, let me give you an example of what the typical retiree looks like. The typical age or average age at retirement is age 62, or 61 to 62. The average years of service, 22 years. And the average overall pension is about $15,000 to $16,000. That's the average. That's going back for everyone who's been drawing for quite a few years.
Yeah.
Right. So what is the new retiree average pension? $20,000. So there aren't that many people to throw that average off that are getting much larger. So that's what the picture of the IPERS retiree looks like. For those that are coming back into, whether it's public service, there are caps and limitations on that. If they're coming back as a contractor, we don't know that. But if they're coming back as a paid employee, we do have at IPERS, there are rules and regulations as to how much they can earn before it starts affecting their pension.
You heard Mr. Fitzgerald's solution here and recommendation. Would you say that's more of a politically inspired solution rather than actuarially?
Both of the concerns about retirees returning to work and the salary cap are more political or policy issues as opposed to funding fixes. And it's a policy consideration that the policymakers have to make a determination of what the retirement
But policymakers, you've already admitted, run the system ultimately.
Yes, they do.
Probably not going to happen because our governor would be one who worked for the state for a long time, left and then came back. Right? I mean, he's probably the poster child for somebody who's worked in state government for a long time, left and then came back.
IPERS presented a study to the legislature 2 years ago now, and we'll be doing a renewal next month on the retiree return to work. And the great majority of those are making less than $10,000 a year because who are they? Primarily, they are teachers that are filling in as substitute teachers, people that are coming back and driving the school bus. The numbers may seem large when you say 6,000 out of 100,000 retirees or 8,000 out of 100,000 retirees, but they're filling in ad hoc here and there, and that's the great majority of them.
Ms. Tegeler, talking about policy decisions that legislators and the governor made, over the past decade, some state employees who weren't eligible to retire were given a bonus and said, please retire so we can get your big old salary off the payroll. And we can hire somebody who will make a lot less than you do. Is that bad policy to encourage people to retire before their retirement age? And is it creating problems for the three systems that aren't IPERS?
Well, in the police and fire plan, they have what's called a drop. And so they, it's even more amazing. They're paying them to stay because they don't want them to retire. And so they're allowing them to collect their IPERS while their pension while they're working. So we're kind of working at just the opposite direction there. We're paying them to stay by giving them their pension. Elsewhere, we're paying them to leave to allow them to collect their pension. And I think each case of early retirement, you have to analyze the costs and benefits and project them out and see to what extent that's going to pay for itself. But it does load some expense onto the system.
So what has been the expense of this early retirement push?
We didn't evaluate that separately because at the same time as the state was offering that early retirement package, many of the school districts were also offering early retirement packages because they were seeing reduced revenue and looking at ways to reduce their current employee costs. So we had a number of early retirements in 2010 and 11.
Mr. Fitzgerald, we're in an economic recovery. It is slow, but the economy is recovering. And you mentioned, you know, how much of this problem is perhaps dealing with return on investments. How much would the economy have to grow to take a significant share of this problem actually off the table? In other words, growing our way to solvency.
Well, that's a pretty difficult question to answer. But first of all, if you look at the investment returns for IPERS, they've been tremendous.
The actuarial assumption
was 7.5%, and they beat it for every timeline you would want, 1, 3, 5, 10, 20 years. IPERS has had a great return on investments.
So to say how much more, that's
a hard question, but I know our consultant advisor says we won't earn as much as our actuarial assumption.
But Kate, one thing that we can't do here is go beyond our retirement time. We're out of time.
I'm sorry.
Thank you for being with us.
We'll be
back with another edition of Iowa Press next weekend. Same time, 7:30 Friday night, noon on Sunday. I'm Dean Borg, and thanks very much for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
Iowa banks know you want honest advice about how to best reach your financial goals. Whether it's financing and education, buying a new home, growing a business, or funding retirement. Iowa banks, Iowa values. MyIowaBank.com.
Iowa Communications Network. ICN's connectivity offers Iowa's rural hospitals and clinics access to telemedicine opportunities. Iowans can eliminate distance barriers by receiving medical treatment closer to home using remote specialists located miles away. Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org.
Alliant Energy, working to help Iowa small businesses become more profitable with energy-efficient heating, cooling, lighting, and more. Information is available at alliantenergy.com.